Heute habe ich Auschwitz-Überlebende Dr. Edith Eger zu Gast, die gleichzeitig Autorin ist von dem Buch In der Hölle tanzen und ihrem neuen Buch Das Geschenk. Edith ist 94, plant gerade ihren 95. Geburtstag im September und lebt auf dem Standpunkt, wir sind niemals Opfer.
I just really wanted to die.
Yes.
And I am so glad I did not, because there was a voice telling me, you can be for something rather than against something. So I was able to think about how I can be useful and do something for humanity.
Ich bin Dana Schwandt mit Da ist Gold drin.
Ich freue mich so unglaublich, heute dieses Interview mit dir teilen zu dürfen. Dr. Edith Eger hat das Buch In der Hölle tanzen oder The Choice geschrieben. Und das ist für mich eines der wichtigsten Bücher überhaupt, was ich jemals gelesen habe. Sie wurde mit 16 Jahren 1944 aus ihrem Heimatland Ungarn nach Auschwitz verschleppt und hat dort ihre Mutter und ihren Vater im Konzentrationslager in der Gaskammer verloren, musste vor Josef Mengele um ihr Leben tanzen und hat mit ihrer Schwester Magda, die gerade vor einiger Zeit 100 geworden ist, diese Hölle durchlebt und gehört tatsächlich zu den wenigen, die Auschwitz überlebt haben und hat ein unfassbares Buch geschrieben, ein unglaubliches Leben geführt, hat ihren Mann irgendwann kennengelernt, hat zwei Kinder gekriegt, ist nach Amerika ausgewandert, hat dort mit über 40 angefangen, Psychologie zu studieren, und ist mittlerweile arbeitet sie als Psychotherapeutin, hat viel mit Veteranen gearbeitet, mit traumatisierten Menschen und einen unglaublichen Unterschied gemacht bisher schon auf dieser Welt und noch immer strahlt vor Kraft und Selbstverantwortlichkeit und Lebensfreude. Es ist wirklich beeindruckend. Also liest auf jeden Fall das Buch The Choice oder In der Hölle tanzen. Ihr neues Buch ist sozusagen das Follow-up davon. Das Geschenk heißt das. 12 Lektionen für ein besseres Leben, wo sie ihre Geschichte greifbarer macht beziehungsweise umsetzbar. Also hat 12 Lektionen extrahiert aus ihrer Geschichte. Weil in der Hölle tanzen erzählt sie einerseits ihre Geschichte und gleichzeitig aus ihrer Erfahrung als Psychotherapeutin in der Praxis. Unglaublich. Und ich hatte das unglaubliche Privileg, diese Frau zu interviewen. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, falls du Schwierigkeiten hast, damit zuzuhören. Sie hat einen relativ starken Akzent, weil sie aus Ungarn kommt. Kannst du dir das Ganze auch auf YouTube anschauen. Da kannst du dann die Übersetzungsmodus einstellen. Jetzt erstmal viel Spaß. Welcome and thank you so much for your time. I was so called to get to interview you because I read all your books, of course, but also because in the past years, I have dove in more into my history of what has happened in my family. And my mom, actually, like, her parents flew as Jews from Germany when they were kids, like around the time you were in Auschwitz, when they were 14, 15, 16. And my dad's side, actually, my grandfather was in the war for Germany and Russia. So what is coming to me that there is just so much trauma and fear and guilt accumulated, not only in my personal story, but like I can see it now everywhere in Germany. So I just would love to bring your voice, your healing voice to my people.
Some to unite.
Yes, something to unite. So my first question is,
Is there a way, before we dive into your story, is there a way to actually heal from these types of horrific trauma?
This is what I like to say. For me, and I can only speak for myself, I will not forget what happened. I do not overcome what happened. I came to terms with it. And I call it my cherished wound. But I think it gave me strength to make every day Valentine's Day that I was put into this world to really hopefully unite people so we can have a family of brothers and sisters that we can empower each other with our differences. Mm-hmm. I go to Germany and I find people who do not want to just run away from the past, and I live in a present, and I think it's very wonderful for you to read my book that I don't have time to hate. If I would live in hate, I would still be a prisoner.
Yes.
I live in a present.
Yes, which is so beautiful. And you probably know there is this saying, or like in people, you know, being in the spiritual world or realm at the moment, they say, there is a reason for everything. And sometimes when I think about, you know, your story or my past stories from my parents, it seems cynical. So can you talk about that a little bit, maybe?
I think we pathologize too much. We talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, but I don't think it's a disorder. I think we have post-traumatic stress. We have a story, but I have a story, and I'm going to tell you I'm not my story. Mm. I'm not my story. I can change from moment to moment, hour by hour, day by day. I was 16 in Auschwitz, and I learned how not to allow anybody to get to me unless I give them permission to get to my spirit. And I learned to really look at the guards, and instead of hating them, I felt sorry for them. I decided that they were the prisoners because they were brainwashed.
Yes.
To hate me and tell me that I will never get out of here alive. The only way I will get out of here is a corpse. And I said to myself, I am going to do everything in my power to be a whole person. W-H-O-L-E, whole, that my body, my mind, my spirit, that I am going to do everything I can to see to it that this will never, ever happen again.
Yes. And You're doing amazing work.
That's my calling. That's my calling.
That's your calling.
And I am happy to be 95. September, and my daughter is already made reservations in the country club because they were all booked up and they only had one day. And so September 23rd, I'm going to be celebrating my 95th birthday, I hope.
I hope so too. So nice. I would like to dive a little bit into your story for the people that haven't heard it yet. So I will have told a little bit in the introductory. So you have been to Auschwitz when you were 16. One thing I was wondering when I was reading your story is, when was the moment that you actually realized what was happening, because there was these, all these incidents that happened. You were on the train and with your sister and arriving, but when was the moment you realized what was going to happen to you?
I hear myself right now when I asked, does anyone know that I'm here? I felt I was just thrown out of the nest, that maybe I did something wrong. And I wonder, does anyone know that there is an Auschwitz? And when will I see my mother? Because I was told that she's burning in the oven. And yet I still wanted to somehow have hope. And I never gave up hope that this is temporary and I'm going to tell people what happens when good people do bad things. Mm. You know, the Nazis were beautiful children, I'm sure. You know, you're not born to hate or judge other people. We learn it.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm glad that you are interviewing me, because you know a great deal about families and family dynamics. We have a whole family within us. There is a little girl in you that is crying, and that little girl wants a good mommy, and you show up for that little girl.
Yes.
And tell that little girl, I'm never going to leave you. I'm going to take care of you as long as I live. You are safe with me. And I hope that you talk to yourself, because the way you talk to yourself changes your whole body chemistry. The way you think can change your whole life. And so I think I'm going to die happy.
Yes, I hope I will die happy too. it's just so beautiful to see your smiling face. And I keep thinking, I was reading in your books that I think it was in the second book that you wrote somewhere, I dye my hair and I'm not gonna dye it two colors, not three colors, but I'm gonna dye it with four different colors just for the joy of it.
Yes. You know, I don't know if you have that card. That was my happy holiday card I'm holding. I have seven great grandsons, and that is, you know, my revenge. Revenge is not really giving you, maybe temporary gives you a little satisfaction, but the idea of forgiveness has a great deal to do with how I decide to be a good role model, that children will look at me and say, when I'm 94, I'm not going to sit around and wait till I'm going to be busy, and I'm going to be a wonderful, wonderful role model. You know, children don't do what we say, they do what they see.
Yes.
So the best thing for children is a happy marriage.
Mm.
Happy marriage, that you don't yell. I remember my mother was yelling a lot, mm-hmm. especially when my sister Magda would go out with boys and come home late and things like that. And the two of them were just not really sitting down and have a good conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes people think when they are yelling that, you know, you're going to be more effective. I don't think so.
No, I can see that with my kids. It's definitely not more effective.
How old are your kids?
10 and 14. I have a girl, she's 10, and a boy, he's 14. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Very happy.
He's just 10-year-old, very, very mature.
Yes. Yes, very happy family. Tell me more about the time after you were released from the Nazis, because in like this very naive way of thinking, I think one would think, okay, so you're released and then you're happy ever after, but your story is so different and so touching. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more what started to happen to you after you were released in Gunskirchen in 1945.
You know, I understand that I'm going to be at a conference with a doctor that I really, really admire. His name is Dr. Seligman, and he talks about what he calls learned helplessness. Because when I was liberated May 4th, 1945, by the 71st Infantry, people were going through the gate, and pretty soon they would come back and sit down because we were free, but we didn't know what to do with freedom. The other thing is Erich Fromm, who wrote the book Escape from Freedom. Freedom really requires responsibility. But when you're brainwashed, you really don't know what now. So people would go through the gate. I was too ill to walk. I was kind of crawling. Actually, I was among the dead, and a man held my hand, and I looked up, and I saw tears in the eyes and M&Ms in a hand.
Yes. And then you were released. And
then I was waiting for my parents to come back. Mm. And they did not come back. And then I wanted to know when I will see the boyfriend. And I was told that he died a day before liberation. So I became suicidal after I was liberated. I just really wanted to die.
Yes.
And I am so glad I did not. Because there was a voice telling me, you can be for something rather than against something. So I was able to think about how I can be useful and do something for humanity. And thank God I went to school and I became Dr. Edith Eva Eger. So my books are letting you know how you can turn everything in life into an opportunity. There is a gift in everything, and Auschwitz gave me that opportunity to discover that life is about inside out. So if we wait for someone else to make you happy, I don't think that's a good idea, because the only one you have for a lifetime is you. All other relationship will end. Dependency breeds depression. Mm.
Dependency breeds depression.
Be careful. That's right.
Mm.
You know, if you meet a man and tells you, I need you, run. You don't want anybody who needs you.
Mm-hmm.
Needs are things without which we cannot survive. We need to breathe. In German, how do you call it?
Atmen.
Atmen. So it's what you practice, that's what you're going to be good at.
Mm.
That's what you practice in Germany.
It's so breathe. Powerful. Yeah, it's so powerful.
Breathe.
And it's so interesting. So your story with Bela, when you got married to Bela afterwards and you had children, and then you at that point decided, quite differently to what you're saying now. Can you talk more about that, that you divorced?
Well, you know, people ask me, did you love your husband? And I answered, love? I was 17 years old. I was very skinny. I was very lonely. And most of all, I was very hungry. And Béla bought me Hungarian salami. And that's how, you know. So you see, we grieve over not what happened, but what didn't happen. I did not have teenage years that you know, you date and then you dump that guy and then you date another guy, you know. So I think it's important for everyone who reads my books to really go and revisit the places where you've been. And when I divorced Béla, it's because I really didn't know life. And I was so hungry. Today I usually diagnose people that they're hungry. They're hungry for affection, for attention, for approval. There is a lot of hunger that we need to take care of ourselves before even think about marriage, that to become emotionally and financially independent. Were you financially and emotionally independent? I certainly was not. And then I fled with my husband in 1949 and ended up in Vienna at the Rothschild Hospital. I don't know if you know that place.
No, I haven't been there.
Yeah, but thank God they were people who took care of us, American people. And I was speaking in Miami one time and I told them, maybe a young mother with a little girl is being held by you. They're very generous people. They did very well in America. One of them is, I think, selling Cadillacs or own the Cadillac, whatever, because Arbeit macht frei, there is a great deal to be said about work makes you free. And I will work as long as I live. I will never retire, ever, because my work is my calling. It's not a job. It's my responsibility to see to it that my parents didn't die in vain. My father, when we arrived and when he read Arbeit macht frei, said to us, it's not a problem. We're just going to work and go home. And that didn't happen. Everybody under 14, over 40, every mother with young children were automatically told where to stand. And I was very fortunate to be able to somehow thrown into the other side when I was following my mother. And that was the very man that I danced for. We call him the
Angel of Death.
The Angel of Death, Dr. Mengele. And so you are here now interviewing me, that I have 3 children, I have 5 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandsons. That's my revenge. I don't have time to go and look for the Nazis, but I will tell you, question authority. don't blindly adhere to authority.
Yes.
I think our biggest enemy is ignorance. We need to be very careful who we talk to, what we say, that we don't say one thing and do another. I think especially parents are good role models so that children can really look at you to sit down and have a conversation and how to agree to disagree. And you are right for you, I'm right for me. But I cannot be right for you, and you cannot be right for me.
How do you balance the questioning of authority with trust? Because I can see in Germany, especially now in pandemic times, you know, and vaccination, not vaccination, there's a lot of questioning of authority. Yes. Which is, you can be healthy, like you're saying, but on the other hand, like there is this trust on the other side. So how do you balance?
Yes, well, we are scientifically now can explain many things, but what is happening that we have a tendency to take something from generation to generation to generation. I was in Switzerland and I had my daughter with me, and she's going to be, she's a life coach now, but she's training to be
an executive coach.
A coach with people who coaching leaders, leadership. Mm-hmm. So he discovered that his grandfather was a Nazi somewhere in the attics. And now he's lecturing with my daughter, who is a daughter of an Auschwitz survivor. And it's amazing how that guy just didn't know what to do with that information. And I told him, you don't know what you have done under the circumstances, so don't judge. Don't judge your grandfather, because children are very impressionable. And when you hear Heute Deutschland on Morgen die ganze Welt, it's very impressionable for a child that I'm going to take over the world. And I heard that when they took my blood in Auschwitz, and I asked, I spoke German, quite fluently does that. I asked him, why are you taking my blood? And he said, to aid the German soldiers so we can win the war and take over the world, the ganze Welt. And I said to myself, I was a ballerina. With my blood, you're never going to win the war. So you see, you have to have some humor. You have to find some humor. Cynicism, sarcasm, but any kind of humor that you do not allow anybody to change you.
Yeah. You say there is no freedom without responsibility, which I so love. Can you speak to that maybe?
Yes, Annie. One of the things I must tell you, that we don't grieve over what happened, but what didn't happen. Because when my granddaughter asked me to buy her a pretty dress so she can go to her school, the Bishop School in La Jolla, and so I did buy her a pretty dress, and I came home and I was crying, and I didn't understand, what am I crying about? And then I realized I'm not crying because I bought a Larry
Laura Ashley,
original dress, a black velvet dress. I cried because I never went to a dance. So don't lie to yourself, because each of us carry messages within us. My mother told me, I'm glad you have brains because you have no looks. Because I had two beautiful sisters and I was cross-eyed, and it didn't hurt me because I became very, very learned. I had my own book club, and you know, I'm Dr. Eager now. So it's not what happens, it's what you do with it. I don't have anger to carry with me. You see, we either vent anger, and some people just blame. And while you blame, you're still a child. Children blame. But there is no freedom without responsibility. Freedom without responsibility is anarchy. So that's why, as a child, when I ask, why do you do that? And the child would say, because I feel like it. Children don't care about responsibility. But as an adult, you still would like to do that, but you're not going to unless it is in your best interest. So, you know, when you are a child, you sit in the back of the car and you do whatever you do, messing around while somebody is driving the car. But now you face the question, do I want to be the driven or do I want to be the driver? Yeah, because I will then see to it that I live a life of an adult and have an adult conversation rather than being a dictator. You can be a knowledgeable leader. Because children don't do what we say, they do what they see. So you're going to come home tonight and tell your husband, I want to have a love affair and I want to have it with you.
Ooh.
Yes. Is she going to come bad or what?
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I love how you, in your second book, how you write about also that there is only, how do you say that? You said something like the fight starts with two people, but it can be ended by one, similar to that.
It takes two people to fight and one to stop.
Yes.
You know, it's a win-win solution. As long as you stay with I feel, I think, I would like, and I'm willing. Because in order to able to sit down, you must learn how you can change. If you change, you don't grow. I studied Latin, and my Latin teacher said, tempora mutantur et nos mutamur in illis. Times are changing, and we are changing with the times.
Times are changing, and we are changing with the time.
See, I'm not the same as I was when I divorced my husband. Actually, it had nothing to do with him. And I didn't go back to him. I had a new beginning.
Say more.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very different way. I'm not going back. You just learn from it. Otherwise, you may repeat it again. Yeah, and I think that's the best thing I could do, because I stopped being someone who may not really knew how to take full responsibility for my thinking, my feeling, and my behavior. And that is called grief. Mm-hmm. See, in therapy, we are grieving, feeling, and healing. You cannot heal what you don't feel. See, what comes out of your body doesn't make you ill. What stays in there does.
Ooh, so you can't heal what you're not willing to feel. What you're not feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why crying is very good for you. What comes out of your body doesn't make you ill. See, I came to America. I didn't speak a word of English. I just wanted to be a Yankee Doodle Dandy. But I had a 16-year-old girl in me. So I was not good as a psychologist, especially with the Vietnam veterans, because I ran away from my past and they helped me to go back to Auschwitz. Look at the lion in her face, acclaim my innocence, assign the shame and guilt to the perpetrator, and begin to forgive myself that I survived. Because when I graduated with honors, I didn't show up for my graduation. I didn't give myself permission to even think that I deserve it. All I could think of that they are dead and I don't deserve. And that's not really good thinking. I think if you go and do something and you feel good about it, come up with a reward system.
Maybe you
can put a little money in the jar. You know, Jewish people have something called pushka. You know, they put money in it and that jar and they give it to charity. And you can do it too and go and buy yourself a beautiful scarf. And I just got this wonderful scarf.
It's beautiful.
From a lady whose mother was in Auschwitz, and she was in Auschwitz in 1941. I arrived in 1944. I was part of the Eichmann Final Solution. When 15 highly educated people celebrated in the evening that they can put 30,000 Jews in the oven without gassing them. 15 highly educated people, not the other people. These are educated people, brainwashed totally. I think it's very important to, you know, point out that genocide is among us, even among us now, but never in a history of mankind, such a scientific and such a happening that it's not comparable. So that's why it's very important to see to it that your children learn how to think, not what to think.
So they learn how to think, not what to think.
So one more thing with that when you are about to say something, tell your children, ask yourself, is it important? Is it necessary? And most of all, is it kind? What is German kind?
Lieb.
Liebe?
Lieb.
Lieb, yeah. Yeah, love is the answer.
Always.
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 Self-love is self-care. It's not narcissistic. So please get up tomorrow morning, look in the mirror and say, Dana, I love you. And that's how you start your day. Because you can't give to anyone what you don't give to you. You love yourself, hopefully, that you're not so needy.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Can I ask you one more question? How, and I don't know if that is even a question because it's just so, like the, all our stories are so different, but how did you find the strength to go back to Auschwitz and to go to Austria to sleep in the same bed as Goebbels did? How? Because I can see from like your psychology background that you would probably could rationalize that would be a good thing to do to heal. But that's like a whole different story to actually take yourself there.
Yeah, I love you to ask me that question because I went to my sister Magda, who just celebrated her 100th birthday.
I saw it.
She was with me in Auschwitz. So I went to her and I said, I am going back to Auschwitz and I'd like you to join me because it's really the biggest cemetery of the world. And so I gave my spiel. And she looked at me and said, you're an idiot. So that was the end of me asking my sister. That was that. It's always good to ask for whatever you want. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. So if I come to you and tell you I like to get to know you, I want you to be my friend, and you tell me you're not interested, there is such a word that you don't want to use. It's called rejection. No one rejects me but me. I just wanted something and I didn't get it. So there is expectation on one hand, reality on the other. That's, so are you a realistic person or an idealistic person? Because when you're an idealist and you don't get what you want, you can be very cynical, very sarcastic. I know Hungarians are very cynical. I hope not to be, but I think it's very important to rehearse what you're going to say and then tell people what's in it for you. It's called negotiation and compromise. That's what you need in marriage. Give and take. And tolerating differences.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like it. You just know that my husband was very, very punctual. When we went to a party, he was already in the car waiting for me. I didn't like that. But if I had to be at the airport 5 o'clock in the morning, I knew I can count on him. So the very thing that you appreciate one time, you resent another time.
So then so Magda said, I'm not coming. I'm not coming. You're an idiot. But you still went.
She told me I will be re-traumatized and she wants to protect me.
And there were people, that's what I read in your book as well. There are actually people that went back and were re-traumatized and died afterwards. So there was like an actual risk, but you still found the strength to go.
I always had the will to live. I always had the dream that someday I'm gonna tell other people what happens. And that kept me not ever giving up. And you know what? My ancestors were slaves. And then Moses came and they took these people to the desert, and they walked, and they walked, and they never gave up. That's the blood you carry, that's the blood I carry, that our ancestors' suffering made us stronger. We can always die. We're gonna be dead for a long time. But see, how can you be for something? And you can be for life and for changing many, many people's lives. Even now, what happens when you're suicidal? I'm gonna make it very simple, that you either have something what you don't want, or you want something what you don't have.
Mm. So simple.
Yeah. That's why whatever you practice, you become better at it. If you practice fear, you're not going to have love, because love and fear does not coexist.
Mm.
You're not born with fear. You're not born with fear. But your children may come home from school. And I know when I was a little girl, I was called a Christ killer. I didn't know that Jesus was a Jewish boy. I had no idea that he died as a Jew. And I just didn't want to be a Christ killer. So what I'm thinking about Jesus, that he lived a life and telling people to turn the other cheek. And I kind of like that, because what it means, don't go back and do the same thing over and over again, but look at the same thing from a different pair of glasses.
Mm.
So I can look Auschwitz as an opportunity for me to discover my inner resources, my way of changing my thinking, and actually praying for the guards. And I'm here to tell you about it.
Yes.
So see whether you may want to realize that your thinking creates your feeling. It's very hard. Just think about your thinking and pay attention what you're paying attention to. Like having an arrow, that's a good thing, to have an arrow that you follow. I usually tell people that I came on Bremerhaven to New York on a ship called the General Howard or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's for people who are displaced. And when it came through England, there was a big storm. And I saw the ship going away. But then we came back, because we didn't go to China. We had to go to New York. So I think it's good for everyone in life, especially in midlife. You don't have a crisis, you have a transition. You don't have your period, but who wants it anyway? You can't have any babies, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
And it's transition, no crisis, no problem. It's a challenge.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem, you have a challenge. You don't have a crisis, you have a transition. The way you think.
Yeah. The way
that's how you're going.
Yeah. And if someone like you with your story and your background is able to actually train yourself to have that transition, like to look at it differently and to train your mind to look at it in a different way, then I think most of us should be able to do that. Yeah.
You know, he also said, love thy neighbor as thyself.
Yeah.
I think that is a great, brilliant way to think, because if you don't love yourself, you know, why should I?
Yeah.
It's very, very important to really do something.
Yeah, and do the healing work, like you said, like love yourself, because hurt people hurt people. So healed people heal people. That's what, that's what you can see in yourself.
It's very important. Yeah. Selfish people don't like themselves, really, if you look at it deeply.
Yeah.
And don't try to be like anyone else. You can just be the one of a kind you. There'll never be another you. That is exciting. So now, how you turn anxiety into excitement?
I love that. That would be a great place to finish, but I have one more very important question. So I feel there is still a lot of hatred and grief and hurt and trauma amongst Germany, just from the history. There is in all of the world, but for me at the moment, looking just at Germany, and from your perspective, is there anything you can, you would want to say or give, say to every single German person, if you could talk to every single German person, what would you say?
I think it's always good to put together three generations, the grandparents, the parents, the children, and exchange philosophies and see how they can agree to disagree.
Ooh, how they can agree to disagree.
I was liberated by the Americans, and I fell in love with the music. I learned how to do the boogie woogie. But young people call it supermarket music, whatever it is. But I like that supermarket music, elevator music. I like the big band. I think it's very important to respect each other and stop criticizing, to be for something. And that's why God gave us two ears and one mouth, so we talk less and listen more. That's important.
So good. So good. Dr. Edith Eger, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time, your beautiful smile, your wonderful four-colored hair. Thank you so much for your books. I cried and cried and cried. I read and reread, and I'm going to gift them to everybody. It's just so wonderful to have your words. And for me, the opportunity, since my grandparents are dead already, to have the possibility to talk to you. Thank you so much.
I want to come to Germany.
Yes.
And I want a Wiener Schnitzel.
Yes. Come and we meet up.
And I want some strudel. Those two. Okay.
Thank you
so
much.
And when you come here, I'm going to make you a Hungarian chicken puppet.
Oh, yes. I'd love that. Thank you so much. Let's exchange some food.
Grüß Gott,
Grüß Gott. Cheers. Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thank you.
Was für eine Frau. Was für eine unglaublich inspirierende Frau. Ich bin wirklich immer noch zutiefst dankbar, dieses Gespräch geführt zu haben und das Privileg gehabt zu haben, mit einer Frau zu sprechen, die Auschwitz überlebt hat. Für mich ist das wirklich besonders, insbesondere wegen meinem Background, von dem ich auch erzählt habe. Also, dass ich einerseits in meiner Familie den jüdischen Hintergrund habe, aber auch den deutschen, und das so vereine und das für mich gerade in den letzten ein, zwei Jahren viel eine Rolle gespielt hat, irgendwie in der Aufarbeitung meines Mindfucks. Also hol dir auf jeden Fall das Buch, hol dir am besten gleich beide Bücher. Ich habe beide gehört als Hörbuch und kann beide uneingeschränkt empfehlen. Am besten erst in der Hölle tanzen und danach das Geschenk. Falls du irgendjemanden kennst, für den das relevant oder spannend sein könnte, leite die Folge unbedingt weiter, teile sie super gerne und lass mir auch gerne ein Feedback da auf Spotify, da geht es glaube ich gar nicht, da kann man nur Sterne verteilen, da würde ich mich auch drüber freuen, auf iTunes oder gerne auch auf Instagram würde ich von dir hören. Da ist glaube ich eine ganze Menge Heilung möglich. In diesem Sinne, hab eine gute Zeit, pass auf dich auf und ich hoffe, dass du da tiefer einsteigst in diese Wahnsinnslektüre von Dr. Eger. Deine Dana.